right now, we are joined by the maestro of history, Scott Washington, for another round of History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history, locally and beyond. How are you?
Well, doing just great, and I know that people are probably going to start camping out just to get those free ice cream cones.
We were talking about people forming lines overnight for the ice cream.
But you know, the real treat is not just the ice cream. It's the chance to see the best radio station staff in the country right here in one place. That's astonishing. Aww. You're looking at me with astonishment, but no, it's really true.
I'm looking at you with gratitude, because if we're better than Mapleview ice cream, that's high praise right there.
Well, I
think the ice cream is the reward, but
but I would say, hey, if you're saying, well, I don't know about the ice cream, well, come on out to see these folks and to express your appreciation, because they do a fantastic job. And we're all grateful. And if you're stuck in traffic right now, you know this is a station to listen to. It's so much more entertaining. And we'll try to make it historic as well.
That's true. So this week in history, what do we got?
Oh, yeah, we got great stuff going on this week. Part of it is, and I'm going to talk about some interesting people who invent things. And one of these is on the 22nd, 1849, when a patent was issued for a device called Improvement for Buoying Vessels Over Shoals. This is when they would run aground, and the object of this thing was to, it would have bellows on the side, and you would inflate them, and it would lift the hull of the ship up enough so it could safely get over the shoals.
Awesome.
Now, the thing, this is kind of what people don't know, is that it's the only U.S. president to hold a patent because of this. And it was actually tried in Nantucket, if I understand correctly, mm-hmm. Successfully. And that president was Abraham Lincoln.
Awesome.
So talk about out-of-the-box thinking. Another one along this same line is Ben Franklin. 1785, invents a pair of glasses in which lenses consist of an upper and lower part.
Yes.
Bifocals. And that, you know, that's just astonishing. These are people you normally don't think of as making those kinds of inventions, but, you know, creativity knows no bounds.
It also says a lot about where people were kind of intellectually at that time. It's certainly the case in the 1700s. You think about the Renaissance man and
right.
that kind of stereotype. It's certainly true with Abraham Lincoln as well. They weren't just politicians and political
right.
actors. They were also philosophers and
right.
also scientists and architects
right.
and agricultural scientists, and they did all
right.
of these incredibly innovative things in so many different fields.
Well, and that idea of trying to solve problems, it
mm-hmm.
wasn't just limited. It was like constant. How do you solve different problems? And both of these people are great examples. Now, I'm not sure if this was a problem that had to be solved, but either we can cheer or cringe.
I don't know where you're going with this.
Cyril Demian in Vienna, Austria, 1829, who's granted a patent for the first accordion.
Oh, I didn't know you could patent that. That's interesting.
You know, so I think they had the little squeeze boxes before
mm-hmm.
then, but the full number of keys, that really is when that first comes out.
Accordion's a really complicated instrument.
Yes.
Like I've played,
oh my gosh,
I've tried
yes.
to, I've taught myself a little bit of concertina, which is just a very small
right.
Thing, but the accordion is just a much
it's
more a complicated instrument. My grandfather owned an accordion, played
really?
It a little bit. Yeah, he was more
wow.
of a guitar guy, but he played a little accordion as well.
Wow, well, it's a
yeah.
great thing, and I mean, it's great fun. What would Lawrence Welk be without the accordion?
Or
song?
Weird Al, or
yeah. any number of
or
people.
Eddie of the other
yeah.
many accordion stars that we could name. you know the list.
Well, I'm sure we'll come up with that next week or something. May 23rd, 1934 is when a fellow is born who's an American inventor. He creates what's called the Moog synthesizer, the first widely used electronic musical instrument.
Moog, I think.
Moog. Sorry,
yeah.
that's right, Moog. In
yeah.
the Moog. Da, da, da.
So people up in Durham, we've just come out of the Moog Fest, they're like, ah, it's Moog, it's Moog.
Moog. But it is M-O-O-G.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That would go right along. I'm thinking of the ice cream. You know, moo.
Yes.
Cow, moo. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
there's some connection. No, okay. Moog. And the Moog Festival is certainly in Durham. There's also another interesting invention, Otto Lilienthal, born 1848. He's a German aviation pioneer. He was the inventor of the first successful glider. Ironically, he All right. died from injuries sustained in a gliding accident.
It was the first successful glider and the first unsuccessful glider.
That's right.
Well, when was that?
I'm not sure about the accidents. He died in 1896, so obviously it was then. But why, I'm not sure about that part.
Interesting. Because there had been so many experiments in aviation
right.
for centuries, like
yes.
leading up to that. Like Leonardo da Vinci
exactly.
was drawing things. You had the brothers in France, whose name I'm forgetting, in the 1700s, who did experiments and created the hot air balloon.
Yes, right.
And it's like right there at the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s
right.
when all of that comes together and we actually figure it out.
So sometimes these inventions come up within a field,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they come up from people just trying to solve different problems,
mm-hmm.
or they're thinking that way and saying, what could we do to change things? So that's a good thing. This week also is interesting. There is a woman in 1673 who became the first woman to act in the capacity of an attorney in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, it's several centuries later before we have the right to vote and things like that. But at least here, North Carolina can claim there was a woman who was acting as an attorney back in the 17th century.
Anne Durant,
Yes,
yeah.
Anne Durant. Also in 1935, May 25th, is when Jesse Owens, in the span of 45 minutes, ties the world record for the 100-yard dash and sets world records for the broad jump, 220-yard dash, and the 220-yard low hurdles in 45 minutes.
Wow.
You know, that's pretty amazing.
You know who really has a lot of responsibility for that, though, was the guy who was scheduling the events at that track and field meet. Like, man, you're just, like, running through all of these different events one after the other.
Or the person keeping the timekeeper, like, what? Did I just see that?
Would never see that today because they actually think to space them apart a little bit more, I think.
And then in 1936, a year later, is when he is a part of the Olympic team and wins gold medals to the embarrassment of the Germans,
mm.
which, you know, Adolf Hitler just did not see that. And he was, with his racist views,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't understand that. But
yep.
the rest of us are inspired.
And it is fun to keep that in mind with Jesse Owens, because when we think about Jesse Owens, we think about that one accomplishment in 1936 when he
yeah.
goes to the Olympics and wins all of those golds. But by the time he gets to the Olympics, he's
right.
already a track legend.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is kind of astonishing, you know, given the times, you know, what he's doing. And again, people coming and rising to the fore
mm-hmm.
and establishing great things. Here's one that's kind of a... interesting. People probably heard of Paul Green here in the UNC area.
Yeah.
But there's another
playwright. So, yes.
Her name was Lula Vollmer. And in 1923, May 24th, her play called Sunup premiered on Broadway. And it was her first and most successful drama and depicted people of the southern mountain region. And she donated all of her royalties of more than $40,000 to help educate them, which
cool.
is kind of amazing.
Is she a North Carolina native?
Let's see. Born in, yes, in 1898, educated at what later became Asheville College.
Okay.
She went to New York after graduation in 1918 to try to sell the play. She kept on persisting until it was finally produced at Providence
awesome.
Theater. And it was subsequently performed in Chicago, London, Amsterdam, Paris, and Budapest. You know, that's a pretty impressive record.
That is pretty
On
good.
On the same day, May 24th, the nursery rhyme Mary Had a Little Lamb was first published. And it was based on an original poem by Sarah Josepha Hale
mm-hmm.
on May 24th, 1830, and inspired by an actual incident. There was a girl named Mary Sawyer, later Mary Tyler, who kept a pet lamb, and she took it to school one day at the suggestion of her
brother. Was it against the rule?
I think it was. Even today, I think that would be like, well, that's nice, but no, I don't think you can have a lamb here. And that morning, a young man.
She probably put all the other kids in classroom to shame when show and tell came along.
Yes.
Like, I've got a button. That's great, Timmy.
Well, let me back. There was apparently a nephew of a local parson who was visiting, and he was so delighted that he wrote the first original stanzas of the poem. And this, you know, we all know Mary Had a Little Lamb, but the rhyme was first recorded by Thomas Edison on his newly invented phonograph in 1877. It was the first instance of recorded verse.
Interesting.
Which is kind of an amazing thing. And then in 1927, Edison reenacted the recording just because they wanted to say, well, let's do it again.
Why do you think he chose Mary Had a Little Lamb? Of all of the things that, I mean, we tell this story, like Edison invented the phonograph and the first thing he recorded was Mary Had a Little Lamb. Like, we've heard that story. Why did he choose Mary Had a Little Lamb of all the things that he could possibly record? Like, if we were doing it today, we would record ourselves complaining about Game of Thrones. But Edison decided to do a nursery rhyme.
Well, that's a really good question, Aaron, and I don't know. It's like the first broadcast of Morse code, which actually happens this week, May 24th, 1844, and he sends the message. Samuel F. B. Morse sends the message, "What hath God wrought?" from Washington to Biltmore. Followed by an order
Baltimore,
for pizza.
Yeah.
I think that was there.
Yes,
right.
Should have ordered the pizza
because
first.
Because you could say it so clearly. Mary had a little lamb.
Yes.
You could, you know, be very enunciate.
That's fair.
Very clearly. Though I'm not sure that's how Edison sounded.
I don't think that was his accent.
No,
but
there was a slight British kind of overtone.
Yeah.
And yeah. We're.
I mean, he is the Wizard of Menlo Park, so he's probably got this like thick Jersey accent.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Marietta. I can't do a Jersey accent. Yeah. So why did Samuel Morse send the message, "What hath God wrought?" Like, what was the significance of sending that message as opposed to, like, you could win $5,000 or something
yeah.
like that?
Sir, I am really lucky now. That's a really good question. Did he have some sense that, oh, my goodness, what will happen with this wireless technology? But I don't know. That's a good, you know, it's one of those kind of interesting questions that maybe evoked a chuckle on the other end.
It might have. I don't know.
Hey, look at this.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about. Like, you know you're going to be doing something that's of incredible historical significance, and the first message that you send or the first thing that you record, that's going to be part of the story. That's
right.
Going to be remembered as well. So
Neil
Armstrong stepping down onto the moon for the first time, he knows what he's going to say. And probably this
and
as
I
well.
Think there was still some changes that were made at that time. Or Alexander Graham Bell, you know, Mr. Watson, come here.
Come here, yeah. Yeah, see, he could have done better than that.
Done, like, yeah, exactly.
Mr. Watson, come here. Watson's on the other end going, really? The
really?
First telephone call, that's the message you decide to send.
Something like you could have said, Mr. Watson, is Sherlock Holmes nearby?
Yes.
Something like that.
Is your refrigerator running?
Yeah.
Yes.
These are the kind of things that really keep us going and makes history so interesting.
We're speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. We got time for two more. What do you got?
Okay. One is a couple, actually, that are kind of interesting. One is, and they're both this week, and that's May 21st, 2007, so it's pretty recent, is when North Carolina purchased Chimney Rock Park in western Rutherford County from the family that had privately owned it for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then opened that. Yeah, isn't that something?
That's slightly before my time. I thought that was a state park the whole time.
That's right. Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. It's kind of a, well, and then 2 months later, the General Assembly merged the Thousand Acre Park with the neighboring Hickory Nut Gorge State Park and renamed the entire almost 6,000 acre track Chimney Rock State Park, which is kind of interesting.
Hickory Nut Gorge, not good enough for them as a name?
So.
All right.
Well, instead of having two competing parks, let's put them all together, and that's a much better better thing.
All right.
In fact, but it's interesting, it was in 1902 when Dr. Lucius Morse Missouri physician diagnosed with tuberculosis. That's right.
Nuclear.
And he was very sick. Yeah. Yes. looking for a healthier climate, bought 64 acres on Chimney Rock Mountain, including the chimney and cliffs.
Oh, that's how it started.
And then built the stairway to the mountaintop and opened to the public in 1885.
Interesting.
Which is really kind of, yeah.
All right.
And the other one, along the same lines, mm-hmm. is May 22nd, 1926, is when President Calvin Coolidge
yes.
signed the bill that established the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Awesome.
Which covers going in western North Carolina into Tennessee. And that's just, you know, it's just great to know that there are people that look ahead and say, these are important things for our public and for mm-hmm. our future generations to look at. And you know, that's part of what we look to government to do, to look ahead and say, these are important.
We're speaking with Scott Washington. We started with inventions, so I want to wrap up with an invention. And I don't want to let the week go without mentioning nylon.
Nylon,
which was
yes.
invented on this day in history in 1934, initially used for toothbrush bristles.
Yes, exactly. And how it made that change, well, you know, the wartime came along, and then there was a use for this, which was great. Let's make nylons out of it.
Sounds good.
Also, Star Wars. Original one debuted this week, 1977.
On May 25th, yeah.
Yes. Isn't that something?
Awesome. Yeah. And that is History Matters for this week. As always, Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Here.